This is a HeadGum Original.
Pat, it is December 1st, and my question for you is, do you expect this December to be a normal length, a short December, or a longer than normal December?
Wow, great question.
Long December.
These
will
be long,
I think.
December.
Yeah, just
it's 2022. We've all been through so much that our distorted notion of what time is, you know, yeah, it's out the window.
I mean,
2020 was 5 years long.
I vehemently disagree. This song rules. I like this song, but every December is the same length. Everyone is 31 days.
Yeah, it's not like February.
Yeah, it's not like the groundhog isn't coming out and telling you if it's going to be shorter or longer.
And it's February can be 28 days, can be 29 days. December,
keeps you guessing.
It's kind of the most final month, because when the month ends, it's not only the end of the month. It's the end of the year.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
It's the only month that you could have a chain of numbered construction paper rings that you're cutting one ring off every day, counting down the days to Christmas. Like, even a child knows how many days there are till the 25th of the month.
And I will add, you're onto something here, because if Christmas is coming up, really flies.
20,
shopping days,
24 days
the
away.
Shopping, famously, Christmas, shopping days for Christmas wind down very quick. It's like 5 more days till Christmas, 4 more days till Christmas. Get those, Black Friday is going to be in a couple of weeks. And I think the notion of December, I think in the popular consciousness, mm-hmm. is that it's actually flies by because of the Christmas shopping conundrum is my, so yeah. I guess, but that said though, I did say it's going to be a long December. I kind of just meant because of the, because of the cultural climate, it just seems like time kind of drags on, unfortunately. Yeah. I don't want to get political here, but I think we've all been living a long December.
You heard it here first. There's either 23 or 24 days to get your shopping done, people, for your loved ones, depending on whether you're willing to go shopping on Christmas Eve or not.
We haven't even made it past the title. We're already trying to punch up this song. We haven't even made it into the lyrics.
Let's punch it.
We are back with Pat Castles. This is Punch Up the Jam, the podcast where every week we listen to one of the greatest hits of all time. We might love it, we might hate it, there might be a combination of feelings about it, and then at the end of the podcast, we're going to play you a better version of the song. We're going to make a better version of the song.
Punch it right in the face.
Than ever existed before. Thanks for coming on, Pat.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Pat Castles, welcome to the show. Pat is former head writer of College Humor, an entire College of Humor, and he was the head writer of it. Then he went and he wrote on Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. This is an incredible pair of credentials, Pat. We are blessed, truly blessed to have you on the pod. Thanks for being here.
I'm great to be here, man. I've known you guys a long time. It's great to see you again, post-COVID.
What is it that you like or dislike so much about the song Long December, other than the fact that we've arrived at December and now you're just thinking about this song a lot because of the word December?
Mm-hmm.
What is it that begged you to bring this song to the pod?
You know, it's funny. Listening to it now, in 2022, I think... At the time, I don't think I was in 1990. What was it, 3 or 4 or 5 or something? I couldn't say I was like specifically a Counting Crows fan, but they were so ubiquitous, you kind of just were by osmosis. I think the thing I liked about it the most, and the reason I wanted to talk about it, is I think it's kind of it exists in this sort of subgenre of music that I feel like was never properly defined, but it was really big back then, which is kind of like, the only term I can come up with was like sort of soft grunge.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, I think the term even at the time, which is very funny, is alternative.
Yes.
There was the whole category of records in the Sam Goody that was just labeled as alternative rock, meaning, and it became the biggest genre in that like sort of like in between era of like between grunge and pop or whatever, where like alternative was so big that in many areas of the country, that's like the biggest section of the record store.
Right. So it's not, by definition, it's not alternative.
Alternative to what?
Yeah.
but it was alternative to something. Hard rock or the hair metal of the 80s.
But I think...
Or just alternative to top 40.
Well, and but I think alternative rock, and like to your point, it was such a broad genre that I think Counting Crows... I'm trying to think of, like, there was some alternative rock that had a little bit of edge to it. You know what I mean?
It was grungy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whereas, like, yeah, you might call Nirvana alternative
rock. Some may have labeled them alternative.
And they were, like, relative, I'm sure this has been discussed, they were relatively edgy. Counting Crows, I feel like, has no edge whatsoever. And I like the song.
And you like it. You like it soft with all the edges rubbed off.
I don't know. I just like that this is it's just a moment in time. So I wound up thinking a lot about why, like, okay, for example, this song was on, this band was in the, was on the Shrek 2 soundtrack, Counting Crows.
Okay.
Okay.
What song do they have on the Shrek 2 soundtrack?
Accidentally in Love. Oh, it was nominated for an Oscar, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
So to be nominated for an Oscar, that means they wrote it originally for Shrek 2.
Is that true? That's the qualification?
That's the qualification. Okay. You can't just put anything, you can't just put some existing hit on Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and then get nommed. It has to be written for the, that's why, you know, The Star Is Born, no, I'm off the deep
end, yeah.
You know, it's written for that feature film so it can get nominated. And that's why there just aren't that many movie musicals anyway. So that's why you tune into the Oscars and you're like, these songs actually kind of suck. Like, maybe there's one good one.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. There's, yeah, I get, yeah, he wasn't just doing it for the love of Shrek then.
Yeah, but he was visualizing the big green guy when he's writing it.
Yeah, I don't think
he was writing it. He was visualizing a small gold statuette, Evan.
Do you think
he was like, this is my chance?
Not a
big
green.
He was like, I'm writing an original song for a film. This is my shot. It's the early 2000s now.
You're right.
Counting Crows is no longer particularly in vogue once you cross, say, the year 1998.
And the first Shrek did win an Oscar. So I guess it, as weird as it seems, like Shrek, I guess at the time, was like Oscar bait. Which I know nine Shreks and four pusses in boots in.
So Shrek 2 was Adam Duritz's shot to go EGOT.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he must have. He had a Grammy at that point.
He has won several Tonys. I mean, it is really funny that, you know, that ever expanding alternative section. It's like includes the Seattle Nirvanas and Pearl Jams and Soundgardens that are all like these crunchy power chords, and then just sitting right next to it is Counting Crows, and they are like, this is off their second album. By their second album, I think there are seven people in the band. Like, there's not a. They have an accordion, for God's sake.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just right in there between Pearl Jam and Nirvana, not alphabetically.
Seven people. That's already
in terms of sales.
That's already seven people. That's already too many friends to be like Nirvana.
That's too many friends.
Friends. That's more band members than Kurt Cobain has.
That's too
friends.
Many friends to have a good friend group. With seven people, you're like, we could whittle this down to four or five people.
Yeah, you have different tiers of friends at that point.
And at the time, now it's like Arcade Fire has like 20 band members, and that's kind of a selling point, I guess. Whereas back then, there was something a little less. I'm not sure. Did Bare Naked Ladies? So Bare Naked Ladies, they had, they did a song for the first Shrek, and I consider them like the flip side of this band, sort of.
They're like,
but I don't mean
they're Counting Crows Wario for 100%.
Counting Crows,
they're
what?
The Wario.
Yeah,
Counting Crows Wario. Right. The evil version of Bare Girls. I hate Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah, is Wadham
my ankles are like literally rising. I'm like sitting up in my chair. I'm like, does Pat like the fucking Bare Naked Ladies?
At the
ladies?
Very mention of
get
the
off
name.
My podcast.
Get off my podcast, Pat. I rip on my shirt. It's just
the maddest I've ever been on this podcast. Check. Just hearing the word.
Just hearing the name.
Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah, because then you started thinking about 1 week.
That's true.
So I don't know. The band is from San Francisco. They're like super. Adam Duritz, who's the lead singer, grows up in the Bay Area. He, you know, they're like banging it out in the music scene, playing like open mics. They're friends with other San Francisco area bands like Four Non Blondes, who have the big hit, you know.
I was gonna say, I was confusing them with Concrete Blonde.
What's going on?
Yeah.
And they have this like weirdly meteoric rise to fame where they start playing together and. They have like a following locally, and a fan brings his brother or brother-in-law, who's a record exec, who basically is like, well, this is really good. And instead of like just like a normal signing, it somehow turns into this crazy bidding war where like all the major labels are bidding for Counting Crows.
And did they have
album?
An indie album out at the time? Like, how does a bidding war start if you don't have a track record?
This huge bidding war. Geffen wins just because they promised the most creative control. and one of their first concerts as a band. This is like how like hot they were just in the industry, which is crazy to think about, is at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, just so much rumor, like, so many rumors have been spread about, like, this band. And, like, can you believe what Geffen spent on this? That
right.
They're flown to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to play for their heroes, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction, Van Morrison.
What?
Yes.
Before they had a record
before
out.
Before they're, like, before they have an album out, before they're, wow. like, going on tour, they're playing at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They're introduced by Robbie Robertson, Rock and Roll Royalty, the guitar player from the band. Who now does like all Martin Scorsese soundtracks.
And they were inducted into the hall that night.
That night.
That's how
that
big the buzz was.
No, but Adam Derwitz says that the first person who ever asked for his autograph is after they played. George Clinton was there. He was probably getting inducted. And he asked for Adam Derwitz's autograph. Kind of, probably like kind of as a joke. Like, hey man, can I get your autograph?
Hey man.
But like,
yeah. That's, yeah. That's like, that the way you describe that is like, you know, in every music biography, every music movie biography, yeah. they like condense their entire career into like one montage where it's like, they do the show, they get the record contract, they get to the yes. Hall of Fame. That
yes.
really happened to them in real life, as you describe it.
It's yes. like the montage or like a speed, they just speed ran it.
They speed montaged their whole getting broken as a band, getting their big break.
Yeah.
You people slug away for years
it's
or
like
whatever.
People say
to
like,
get
oh, they must have been hated by like their contemporaries.
Absolutely.
Whenever you hear someone got famous overnight, people are always like, "Well, like it seems like they got famous overnight, but actually it was years
yeah.
of work that
it
went into it."
It was an overnight success that took 10 years. Oh, yeah.
And his brother knew someone, so yeah. That I thought, yeah, I hope I would be more magnanimous, yeah. but I'm sure that was like, I wonder, maybe is it possible. This is the early 90s, I take it?
This is like maybe. Early to mid 90s, yeah. Probably
so like maybe it's like right the sort of grunge thing. Like, I don't know what the like D-Day for grunge tipping into the culture was. It was just like perfect timing. Like Nirvana just blew up and they just were like, we need to find, it's a gold rush. And they were the first post-Nirvana gold rush seeker. This is complete speculation.
Maybe.
It's inexplicable. I'm trying to find a reason
Yeah, it's
for
hard
it.
To imagine people like connecting the dot from Nirvana to Counting Crows.
That's true.
They're
both
listening.
Alternative rock, dude.
Because they're both alternative. They sound exactly the same.
But their first album is a huge hit.
Yeah.
That's the album with Mr. Jones.
Okay. So that's like their lead hit that introduces Counting Crows to the world.
Then they have a long gap between the first album and the second album that this is on. Adam Derwitz is like crazily famous during this like brief period. Like they're on SNL. He dates multiple actresses who are on the TV show Friends, which is like the most famous thing you can do in the world at that
Courtney
time.
Courtney Cox and Jennifer Aniston. I think at the time,
he dated more than one friend.
You shouldn't be allowed to even prefer Jennifer Aniston and Courtney Cox. You should have to pick a haircut, have to pick a brunette or a blonde. He's just fully dating both of them.
Didn't really settle on a hair. I mean, the hair. I mean, yes, he did settle on a haircut with gusto, but.
he did settle on a haircut.
But he. No, I mean, that. I just like the refresh. I completely forgotten about that. I knew he dated Monica, which we'll get into, I'm sure. But we did not. I did not know the Rachel thing. That's like, I mean, I know Friends still has a big cultural footprint, but if you're not, like, we're all the same age, right? Like, they were probably the two biggest
which is to say,
stars.
We're alive in the 90s. You cannot overstate how big Friends was.
And those two, especially, both of those, they probably, you could argue they were like the two most famous women in TV or film at the time, during when Friends was really white hot. And he dated both of them.
Yeah, Adam Derwitz.
At the same time. Not at the same time. That'd be amazing, though.
You said that he really committed to a hairdo, and I don't want to gloss over for those fans that are only encountering Counting Crows through this podcast, perhaps, because they were perhaps born after the 90s, and they only know Adam Duritz by his mellifluous signature tones. Mm-hmm. He does have a unique voice, and that's got to be part of the selling point of why they suddenly got to play the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame before they had a record. But what you also must know
that's so crazy.
Is... that he was also longtime proponent of the white guy with dreads look.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which was a thing for a minute.
Really was, yeah.
Is it not a thing anymore? I feel like it's always equally been a thing. But he was like the top dog of
right,
that
it's
hill.
A boutique look that never has been in style and never will go out of style.
Yeah, but it peaked. Yeah. It peaked. Now,
I
if
agree.
You're doing it, it's in a retro way.
It was enough of a thing for him, though, that like when he finally cut off his hair, which is just in the last 2 years, I think it was a COVID thing, like there was like a post about
his
it.
His hair
being
got
like,
COVID?
It was like... No, but he like knew he needed to explain it to the fans. He was like, my fans are so used to my...
So now he just has like a tasteful businessman hair?
I think it's kind of shaved short.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just like just very shaved short. And he knew he like, I need to make an Instagram post being like, hey fans, like I know you're used to me with this hair, but it's time for me to move on. Like that's how,
yeah.
That's how tied with his dress.
Yeah, like
he
you
was.
Might have to have a funeral for it, yeah. You know? Like a homegoing ceremony for the hair.
So this is off Recovering the Satellites, their second album. They had a long gap between their first two albums. I guess when your first album is that big of a hit, you're not in that much of a rush. And
you
also,
already
I guess,
played the Hall of Fame. Hello.
Yeah, you already played the Hall of Fame. Geffen gave you a creative control. Robbie Robertson, who I guess they're still in touch with, they just exchanged numbers at the Hall of Fame. He gives them the advice to record in a house for their second album. So they go and record in a house, which is very funny to me as like, are you into the band, Patrick? The band?
I know of them. I know they're super a legend, but
most
confusing band
name.
If
ever.
You go deep into
they did yes the Scorsese movie.
Yeah,
if
yeah.
And they backed up Bob Dylan for
a
years.
A fan of the band, as I have, and you usually the gateway drug is you watch The Last Waltz, which also features Van Morrison, Seeing Caravan. You generally have to become either Team Robbie or Team Levon.
Okay,
and
the
if
two
you
leaders of the band,
the two leaders of the band, Levon's the drummer and lead singer. Robbie is the guitar player, and once you join one of those teams, you're still going to like the other people in the band, but you're going to despise the other person. And I'm strongly Team Levon, so I'm a Robbie Robertson hater. And one thing that's extremely funny to me about Robbie Robertson telling the band Counting Crows to, hey, you should all go live in a house together and record your next album, but you all got to live there, which is what they did. They're like sleeping in closets and shit. Is that famously the band's album, like their breakout album is Music from the Big Pink. And they like all lived in the house together, right? They all lived in the Big Pink in Woodstock together. But actually, Robbie Robertson didn't live in it. He rented a different house and lived there with his girlfriend. He was like, yeah, I don't live with you guys. Like me and my girlfriend are just going to
wait, what?
Over.
The house was it a big, was the house painted pink?
It was pink was big. Yeah, it's on the cover of the album. And
it's just weird that he insisted they all live in a house together. Yeah. Like, why does that have to be part of it? Like, is it, what was he
that's
trying
the creative
to...
process. Like, you're not going to get in each other's heads if you don't wake up together.
Yeah.
Do your first lines at 7 a.m.
But Robbie Robertson
roll out the sleeping bag.
Coasting on this rumor that he lived in the Big Pink when he didn't, as I know, as a member of
the He believed
Levon,
his own lie. He believed his own lie. Him. And now he's passing it on to the youngsters. Let's play the song and just set the bed of nostalgia. The somber nostalgia that is this song. It's a mood.
Okay. Yeah.
Right from the drop. And they don't wait to hit you with the accordion either.
No, yeah. Kind of a soft grunge staple, I feel like, in a way.
A long December, and there's reason to believe maybe this year will
the plaintive whine
better than the last. Can't remember the last thing that you said as you were leaving. Oh, the days go by so fast.
Okay, there's almost too much to talk about. There's so much. There's so much in that 30 seconds.
I take, like, honestly, I'm goofing on him in his hair a little bit. Like, you sing that in front of Rachel or Monica, like, that's your ace in the hole.
Yeah,
that's,
or David Geffen.
Or it's right.
You know, ba-blam. You get signed immediately.
I'm renting a house for you.
You know, he's whining. He's nearly crying. But he's also got about 25% of a surfer bro. When he gets to, this year will be better. There's a vowel on the last.
Wow.
Where he snuck in a surfer there. And each one of those things is loaded culturally. Like, you felt so much from that. He's crying, but also he's a surfer bro.
Yeah.
He's tender and he has dreads.
He hasn't even gotten to the L.A. references
didn't
yet.
Even get
he's already
to
giving you a taste of it.
The level that he is emoting, you can make fun of Adam Duritz's voice with, you know, 30 years of hindsight, but the amount that he's emoting with his voice is really astonishing to me. And we've talked a lot about, like, in that alternative section, there's so many people that I feel like are copying each other, whether it's like, you know, it's like we talked a lot about how Scott Stapp is just sounding like Eddie Vedder doing an impression of Eddie Vedder, like even more than Eddie Vedder. And then you go back and listen to who's this singer from Soundgarden? They're like,
Chris Cornell.
Oh, like, is Eddie Vedder just singing like Chris Cornell? And this is just Adam Duritz is outside of that arena. Like, he's living next to an alternative
he's
section.
Original.
But
I don't prefer his style of singing. This is not for me. This song is for Andrew.
You prefer Scott Stapp.
This
Evan,
is...
Evan's a huge Creed fan. Pat.
Well, I didn't want to... Andrew,
so help me. If you accuse me of being a Stapp stan one more time, this song...
Your Creed is Creed.
Oh, God. Yeah. Pat, get off my show, Pat. Let's get into the canyons, guys.
And it's one more day up in the canyon.
Just a touch of a lead guitar, nice clean electric.
A little arpeggio.
One more night in Hollywood.
If you think that I could be forgiven.
What? What's this about?
Wish you would.
If you think I could be forgiven. Sorry, I had to pause to like, don't let this one fly by.
Evan won't let it get to the na-nas.
I'm not going to give you the na-nas.
He's not
going
to give me the na-nas.
It's the catchy part. It's the catchy part. I don't want to give Andrew the na-nas yet. Because I don't want to slide by this line that is like morally pivotal. What is happening here? If you think that I could be forgiven, I wish you would. Does that mean this is a breakup song? Is he apologizing for a no-no that he did?
It sounds like it, but you're right, though, that I don't... there's no evidence of romance. It's a weird song.
Somebody left.
I don't think it's about romance, but...
Well, he said himself it's about a car accident. So why is he? It's like
Well, we haven't heard about the car accident in the canon of the song yet. Like we know that maybe is the background based on interviews, right?
Maybe it's a did he get broken up with at a hospital by that's a really rude time.
Let's just review. What do we know so far? It's a long December, so he's feeling bummed.
Yes.
Maybe this year will be better than the last. So we've established that things suck. I can't remember the last thing that you said is you were leaving. Okay, so there's been some kind of coming apart.
Oh.
Yeah,
that was in the verse. Well, I can't remember the last thing you said as you were leaving. Now the days go by so fast. Canyons, Hollywood. If you think I could be forgiven, so a little bit of a mystery here. Yeah, we want to find out more about.
He did something wrong. Not a breakup song. I'm not sure it's not a breakup song.
Could be a bro breakup. Like we haven't established.
What's the opposite of a bromance?
We haven't established like a sexual romance.
Oh, you're right.
Could be just like could be friends. You know.
Maybe he was. Oh, wait, we're not bringing the car accident into this yet.
He had an argument. Well, we're about to. But from what we know so far, could be just an argument with the bros, argument with the boys. You know, maybe following out with David Schwimmer.
Or LeBlanc.
Sure.
Wait, can I? I think this is talk aboutable because is this. Song. This was one of my not a punch up per se, but thoughts. Is this song? Is the narrator of the song singing it on New Year's Eve? Because he said it's been a long December, so theoretically it's the very end of the month. It's not the middle of December. Otherwise, he would say
it was towards the end.
I guess you could say it's been a long December so far. But I'm what does can if you put this on a New Year's Eve playlist, good choice or bad choice? Does it belong on a New Year's Eve playlist?
Well, for me, hard no.
Really?
Yeah. I don't go for the sad boy music on New Year's Eve.
Okay, for emotional reasons.
Yeah, I want to party. Okay.
I think it belongs on there. I think it's like, if you play this at a New Year's Eve song, people would like, everyone would just belt the It's Been a Long December. And no, they would belt Maybe This Year Will Be, Maybe Next Year Will Be Better Than the Last.
Well, you'd be doggone sure they'll belt this part. It's an every time.
Different in the winter than the summer. Very climate controlled environments. Hospitals. They're always the same temperature.
Yeah.
Summer and winter.
Good point.
Yeah, they probably always smell the same.
But you know what?
They smell like antiseptic.
I could nitpick that line about do hospitals in winter smell different? Sure. But I still think it's a great
What's
line.
The line?
It's a great line.
Could it be the smell of hospitals, period? In winter, ..
There's oysters with no pearls.
What's the next?
Well, oysters produce their pearls in the summer, it turns out, guys.
The substances in hospitals, like, what do the hospitals smell like in winter? Exactly the same. Linoleum, antiseptic, and cadavers. But what is your experience of that smell? Very different because you have a sinus infection. You can't smell the hospital in winter.
Wow, that bad. So bad you're in the hospital.
Maybe there's just more pneumonia.
Well, you could be visiting.
Oh, I thought you were... You
could be
yourself.
Visiting.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a pneumonia situation. There's just
but it's a great. You're right.
Winter,
it's a great. Even if it's a even if it's nonsense, it's a great nonsense lyric. It's I can't think of a good example, but you know, music history is full of amazing nonsense lyrics.
Yeah, because he's a poet.
It sounds. Right? It's like what's the Wilco line? It's like assassinating down the avenue.
Yeah,
doesn't mean anything.
There's definitely a lot more people dying of the flu in winter, so it could smell different because of the volume of patients.
On the nonsense scale, this is very low on the nonsense scale.
Yeah, no, for sure.
It might not be true, but it doesn't compare to assassinating down the avenue.
Yeah, it is pretty good to jump from hospital to oysters. The oyster...
Two things you should never cross. Yeah. You should never combine hospitals.
If he ate a bad oyster, that's why he's in the hospital.
I'll run it back a few seconds so you can... It's only figurative oysters, but here you go.
That it's all a lot of oysters, but no pearls.
I like eating oysters. It's fine. Okay.
All at once. Look across a crowded room to see the way that light attaches to a girl.
Good line.
Okay, well, back to the hook here. Yeah, you notice the way the light reflects off of that perfectly coiffed hairdo. I think this hairdo could really go places.
He does fall into the ultimate trap of every songwriter, which is the girl world rhyme. Show me.
Oh.
Show me. No, wait. I take it back. It's pearls.
He rhymed it with
pearls. Pearls and girl. Because it's oysters and pearls. So, in fact, he avoided the most dangerous trap for any songwriter, rhyming girl with world.
You just accidentally complimented Adam Duritz's poetry, for sure.
Here, okay, nitpick for me.
Yeah.
I've heard, like, the grit in the oyster is a negative thing, if you get a little sand in the oyster.
Mm-hmm.
He's disparaging oysters.
Oh, totally.
Like, oysters are a delicacy.
Yeah, a delightful food.
Pearls are better, but...
Oysters have had a real cultural turnaround in the last 30 years, and for me, it all goes back to the ultimate 1990s cultural artifact, which is the film Dick Tracy.
What?
Yes,
Right. Who's eating oysters in that?
When you're introduced to Al Pacino playing the bad guy in Dick Tracy.
What's the bad guy's supervillain name?
Big Boy.
Big Boy.
Big Boy. Al Pacino. He's just like, the very first scene you see him in, he's just slurping down oysters. He's just like, I love oysters. Yeah. And like, as a child, I was like, this is how you know this guy's bad.
Yeah,
the
symbol of
oysters.
Him being an effete, elite, a sensualist.
After I lived in New York for a long time, that I was like, I can eat this like a normal person without making this noise. Apologies for anyone listening to this podcast.
Pulled an oyster out of your pocket.
Yeah Andrew actually, Andrew
alarming.
He slurped an oyster to make that sound. You can't make that sound.
I don't
oyster.
Know. There was like, you know, the crossover of like, hedonism and also like the crossover of like a pre-sushi America that was like
a raw oyster.
I think that's the world that Adam Duritz is living in this song.
Yeah, I think he's talking about like a skin diver going through oysters looking for pearls. These are not culinary iced oysters, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I'd be like, this is great. I wouldn't want a pearl in my food oysters.
You crack a tooth.
You crack a tooth, yeah.
Now, this other
then
thing
you're
about
in the hospital.
You look across the crowded room to see the way that the light attaches to a girl. I don't love this part because you had a really fucking solid song going about nostalgia that is like using poetry to set a scene. The setting here is incredible. And then all of a sudden you made it about girl boy loves stuff.
Right. So you're kind of in the same boat with me in terms of like when songs aren't about love, they're a little more interesting.
Yeah, and also, well, let me put a finer point on it. I guess this the whole subgenre of like I'm main character and just by looking at a girl. We've done a number of songs on the show where it's like, you know, you're singing about a girl that doesn't know you exist.
Yeah.
She should drop that zero and get with the hero. And this, in its own little whiny poetic way, is just like coining that, is drawing on that just a little bit. Just like, the girl doesn't know he exists.
Well, generously, that's why the line works for me. Is this guy is talking about being unmoored from a happy place in his life. Whoever he cares about, maybe it's his bromance, maybe it's his girlfriend has left. And now he's just like, he's at a party, he sees someone across the room, and they're never going to be a part of his life, and he knows that. Like that feeling you have where you see someone who's cooler than you or better looking than you at a party, and you wish you could know them, but they don't. That's where the line is for me. The girl isn't the center of this song. She's just someone passing through that he's like,
Well, yeah, I just think light attaches to her face. I just never heard that before.
She's standing in a spotlight.
Yeah, it's like the light is almost painted on her or something.
Getting noticed. I rewound it just a couple seconds because when you get to the hook with the canyons and the Hollywood, the last line is different each time. So let's catch that. California. It says, if you think you might come to California, I think you should. Which I guess is to the man or woman that you had the falling out with.
Okay, right. Okay.
The guitar solo crunchier than you would have expected.
I was gonna say very 90s.
They started to rock out a little bit. Don't expect to get here when you begin a song with the accordion.
Also, very LA the way he said California. That's turned up the LA there 100%.
That was
also
a choice.
Say, that's like kind of a Robbie Robertson the guitar solo to be that far down the neck. A lot of Robbie Robertson guitar solos are really like lower than a usual guitar solo.
I gotta pause for this. I love that you're back into the lefting the connection between Counting Crows and the band.
It's there.
By the way, I want to also say how I give him credit, Duritz. And the band,
Counting Crows.
Okay.
Not the band. You're talking about the band Counting Crows.
And I'm not talking about counting the act of counting. I'm talking about the band Counting Crows. It's like who's on first.
You're not talking about the podcast Counting Albums hosted by Andrew Gregory and Adam Duritz.
No, that's a HeadGum podcast. Sorry. You know the confidence to know you have like a chorus or a melody or whatever or hook. That's so good. You don't even have to write lyrics for it, and you could just say na 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 na. That I think that's just a cool level of like, you just have to know that like, because it's kind of silly to just go na 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 na. And I think there's a lot of songs do it, of course, or na 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 or hey hey or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or whoa whoa whoa.
Our collective musical
na, na,
history
na,
is littered
na, na, na,
with
na, hey 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 good. Hey. For example,
I was
something
running,
like that.
I'm only thinking of one song. I don't know. I think it's just kind of a baller mic drop move to be like, tell me this. Yeah, you can make fun of me for not writing lyrics if you don't think this na 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 is really catchy.
It's really funny to me that we had
no one will say nay to
we had an Ed Sheeran song we did a couple weeks ago with a bunch of na na's in it, and he said his influence was Van Morrison, and now the Counting Crows are saying Van Morrison is one of their influences. Like, does. They're both acting like Van Morrison owns Na Na Na's, and that's crazy to me. Na Na Na's, that's public domain, but both these major artists, Counting Crows and Ed Sheeran, are like, well, obviously Van the man. I mean, he's the one who nods with the best. So we're just trying to nod with Van. It's like, I don't know, guys. I think he can nod without, like...
At least Van Morrison wasn't like...
Van Morrison,
is he British? I was about to do a British
Van
Morrison.
Irish.
He's Irish. I just going to be like, you know, who's using that bloody... Nah, I want a lawsuit immediately. That was seven Nas, by the way. That's $7 million.
It's more Irish than that, though.
I know.
I saw someone's out there. Adam Duritz out there. Nah, 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 no way. As if I haven't been na na over here on the Merry Green Ireland this whole time.
I wish
you can't
had...
just na na. Can you stay over there with your doo-wah titties? You can doo-wah titty all you like, but you can't na na when the van's still alive.
I was just hearing an imaginary tin whistle behind you while you did that.
He's got sha la 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 la.
Sha la la.
He sha la la's all the time with Brown Eyed Girl. He na na's on Caravan.
He's got the ah in his back pocket.
Yeah, but Van Morrison even na na-ing is post. Na 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 from Wilson Pickett.
Mm-hmm. Wow, you guys are good. I'm impressed. It's a very encyclopedic knowledge of. I like just focusing on the Nas too. Forget all the Hayes and the Woes.
Yeah, drop the doo-wah ditties. Stick with the Nas. You're sure our musical history is littered with Nas. To say nothing of
Shalaz. Well, because also doo-wah diddy dum. That's very like effortful. Like obviously you just thought it'd be fun to make up like a little nonsense.
Yeah, they worked on that. They workshopped. Was it doo-wah doo or doo-wah diddy?
Yeah. Whereas I think the na na nas in this Counting Crow song, he was like. You know what? Like, I was going to put some... It was a space filler. Then he was like, you know what? I don't think it needs anything else.
You're right. It comes out. It's elemental. It's animal.
And talked a little while about the year.
And drove up to Hillside Manor.
Again, New Year's there.
I guess the winter makes you laugh.
They're doing the post-mortem on the year.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Very much a post... It's basically about the end of daylight savings time. You're laughing slower.
Now, I'm just going to have to run it back again for Andrew, who plays the role on this show big time of being the rhyme police. as we just talked about, Pearls and Girl versus World, to Duritz's credit, right? Now here in this verse where they drove up to Hillside Manor doing a postmortem in the year, we have the rarely seen, but Andrew loves to see it, triple rhyme, where the winner makes you laugh a little slower, talk a little lower about the things you could not show her. Hmm. Let's hear it.
So she left. She walked. She walked. Lower about the
thing you could not That's great. The one thing I'll say about this song is, you know, you're sleepy in the winter. It's not as fun. Your great uncle has pneumonia, so he's in the hospital. To me, a lot of this song has the vibe of the crappy part of winter that, in my opinion, doesn't take place in December.
Mm.
December, that's all the fun winter stuff.
Yeah. Mm.
You're coming off of the high of Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's getting dark early, sure, but it's like, it's not a grind yet like it is in March when you're like, ah, it's still dark at 5 o'clock.
The first month of any season is fun. It feels new. Yeah.
You're looking forward to Christmas. Then just 1 week later, you've got the second best holiday of the entire year. Who put those two best holidays a week apart from each other? I don't know, but they did.
Yeah. You're talking about New Year's or Hanukkah?
Yeah, New Year's. And then for like 2 or 3 weeks after New Year's, you're still like kind of on a like a high from New Year's.
Maybe, well, you have off from school, at least for a few days.
For me, it's only in February that the winter really starts to drag and you really get into the talk a little slower, laugh a little lower.
So you think the song is that this is song from the perspective of February, not January?
I think there's too much February. I mean, obviously the song is about a long December, but to me the vibe he's describing is really more of a mid to late February vibe.
The emotion of this song is seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah. This is a song about seasonal affective disorder, which doesn't hit in full till January, February, March. December, I'm thinking Santa. I'm thinking getting together with my family. I'm thinking candied yams. Just kidding. I hate candied yams. Never eat them.
If he had a bad year.
They're the bare naked ladies of Thanksgiving.
I mean, in December, I could be watching Home Alone upwards of 10 times. That's going to put me in a good mood.
Well, that's a great December.
Yeah.
That's December.
I'm not going to do that in January or February, watch Home Alone 10 times. No, that'd be weird.
No.
December, I can do that.
Okay, Andrew, it's an interesting complaint that the mood here is so sad. He's really talking about how he had a bummer of a year. He spent a lot of time in hospitals. He broke up with his bro. Somehow, and that really just happened over the course of the year.
I think the bro theory is out the window at this point.
What?
For me, at this point,
it's about a lady?
Yeah. Whatever he didn't show her, you know, something went wrong.
I think the bro's in the hospital. Well, the hospital thing, is the bro in the hospital? I don't mean to dig up the
car wreck guy. Maybe that's the car wreck guy. Maybe he's in the hospital.
Listen, hear me out. Makes you laugh a little slower, makes you talk a little lower, could not get along with Lisa Kudrower. Okay, let's try this last hook. We're recapping the first verse here.
Maybe this year will be better than the last.
It's good, man. It hits different now. You heard all these details about the Hollywood Hills.
Can't remember all the times I tried to tell myself to hold on to these moments as they pass.
He's trying to pre-nostalgia by holding on to the moments.
He also,
I gotta pause it before they absolutely slap us with
the
nanas.
And we've already heard this once in the song, but and there's reason to believe maybe next year will be better than the last.
Mm-hmm.
What is that reason? I ask. I don't think there's a lot of reason. It's a lot of.
I mean, there could be just sort of like the math of it. Like this year was so bad, the next one has to be better.
Yeah, I agree.
Like I'm a moral mathematician here, and I just experienced something so bad it could not be. Just like in 2019 when we all said, "Wow, this year we lost David Bowie and Prince. Nothing could be worse than this. 2020 is gonna be great."
Yeah. So shut your mouth, Adam Duritz. You're gonna jinx us all.
Oh, no. A year so bad that Adam Duritz is like, I've got to cut off my dreadlocks. You're coming off.
Yeah, that's what it took.
But I guess, New Year's Eve, even if it is this, the whole big theme of it is like renewal, hope, optimism for the future. Absolutely.
Yeah, everybody thinks about the no-nos they did during the
previous
year.
Isn't that New Year's song kind of about that, too? I never actually understood the lyrics.
Auld Lang Syne is literally about nostalgia, and you don't want to forget all your friends and your old acquaintances.
Right.
You don't want them to be forgot, so hang on to these good times and these good relationships.
So I think this kind of is a New Year's Eve song, of which there are not many. Auld Lang Syne.
That's a good point. This is actually a New Year's Eve song, and they faked us out with the title. And then again, told us it's specifically about December, where it's actually about like the whole year and how much it sucks. There's the absolutely epic musical choice here, which is they cut out for like what feels like it's going to be a breakdown, like maybe a quiet verse here, as is often the case when you're about three quarters of the way through the song. You need like a palate cleanser, you need a reboot, you need a reset of some type. So you'll often hear like, oh, they strip out all the instruments and it's only the bass and drums or something for a small, emotionally tender verse. And it feels like to me that's what is about to happen. And they leave you hanging for so long, like nothing is happening for several seconds.
That guitar chord hanging in the air.
Yeah, just kind of amazing choice. So I'll just come in right on that gap.
And it's one more day up in the canyon.
The tender verse?
Ooh.
It's one more night.
We'll get it one more variation. What's he gonna say?
So long since I've seen the ocean.
Yeah.
I guess I should.
Na 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 na. We're back in with the na 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 na.
This would be a sneaky good karaoke song just for the na na.
Yeah.
Na 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 na.
It's so easy to sing. You can hook the whole karaoke bar into na naing with you.
Yep.
For sure.
Na 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 na. Na 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 na.
Yeah.
This time we're staring at the ocean while we nah-nah.
Which we've never seen before or haven't in a while.
Santa Monica is right there.
Yeah.
Santa Monica's right there, Adam.
You live in the hills? Hollywood? I guess he's not near the... Hollywood isn't near the water, technically. So I guess he doesn't live near the water. That is actually...
Can I bring a little L.A. thing?
Please, yeah. We're just nah-nahing out to the rest of the song. But like, we're pretty much here. But I do want you to hold that thought because there's a crucial... whiny, at the end.
California.
Yeah.
They don't fade out. They make you listen to this.
Always one more than you expect. No matter how many yes you're expecting the end of that song, it's always
there's one more right now.
But it just hits for me.
Yeah.
What's your LA tip?
Yeah, when you... I lived in L.A. I lived near Hollywood.
A little humble brag.
Wow. No,
humble brag.
No. It's not like a glamorous place, in my opinion. But you never get out to the ocean as much as you think you would. When I moved there, I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna go to the ocean every weekend. Like, it's beautiful, you know, warm weather. And it's very hard to get out there. So it's,
because of the traffic. Yeah, the traffic is horrible.
It is 100% because of the traffic. It's such a cliche.
Yeah, you can't make it out. Maybe on a Sunday at 6 a.m. you could get out to Santa Monica.
And he clearly lives in Hollywood Hills. So
see, if you live in Hollywood, you just go sunbathing on the Hollywood Hills.
Lie down on Sunset Boulevard.
Lie down on a blanket just right next to the D of Hollywood.
Yeah, and then you get an In-N-Out burger, and that's what our lives were. Basically, that's why I left. I couldn't deal with it.
That's the hell.
No, I'm just giving him some L.A. cred. I am trying to figure out. I'm just trying to figure out.
You think it's acceptable he's not going to the ocean? That has been a long time since he's seen the ocean. As a New Yorker, I'm like, how long has it been since he's gone out to Malibu? And you're like, Malibu, it's pretty far.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I'm giving him, cut him some slack. But yeah. Or. I listened to this. I had one thought about that. Was it a suicide reference? Because he seems really sad in this.
It's extreme. He's very moody.
I just was wondering. He's talking about walking into the ocean. Like, are we supposed to think about
ask the question. I don't think that's what he means. I think he wants to go stare at it and just like be pensive. Right. But at the end of this song, you're definitely asking the question: is he okay? Do I need to call the hotline?
The hospital is invoked. That kind of puts mortality front and center.
Los Angeles, the ocean. It's more of a thing about like, maybe he used to play football at Ohio, but he hurt his knee.
Yeah.
Now he's in the FBI. He's training to be an undercover agent.
Oh, yeah.
He's
going
to the beach
to try
to catch some bank robbers.
Oh, right.
And he starts surfing.
Oh, my God.
But after he catches the bad guys, he's not surfing as much anymore. He doesn't see the ocean.
Yes.
That's for me is kind of where it's at.
Yeah. Are you saying that the plot of Point Break is inspired by...
Yeah, I'm saying this is a Point Break song. His friend was in this terrible accident, this terrible skydiver.
Oh, my God.
Utah, give me two.
We got some real opposing takes on this song. This song, I understand it to be a hit. It does make me, I experience feelings when I listen to it, but this song's not for me, necessarily. It's not to my taste. It is for Andrew, who is in the bag for this song, loves it, listened to it at the time. continues to listen to it today. This is a heavy lift because we have some different perspectives. There's some agreement about like how great this song is. We don't know what our angle is. We're going to take a break and come back, because we must, with a punched up version of this song. One thing I failed to ask before the break, which is, I don't know, maybe it's rote, been done, but I must ask it. Just in your opinion, how many crows are there?
Wow, that's a good question.
Has it been answered? Do we know, canonically?
Counting crows. No, because they're not counted crows.
It's from
counting,
a,
present tense.
It's from a nursery rhyme.
Is it, so the, is it the 4 and 20 blackbirds?
Maybe if we went and read the nursery rhyme, it would be clear. Like, maybe it's a counting thing. Maybe it is the 4 and 20 blackbirds. Maybe it's probably, people in England know that. We can't know it.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's very macabre in a weird way. It sounds like the title of like a George R. R. Martin novel or something.
Yeah, it's
like
it's
that.
You know, you talk about crows, you're getting into some Edgar Allan Poe stuff.
Yeah, count the crows.
Yeah, count the crows.
When the third crow is counted, the seal is broken.
As you walk you down go. To the cemetery.
What? Count the yeah, crow. Yeah, that's bad. That's bad when the seal's broken.
I mean, it's a good question for Duritz. How many crows?
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure he's been asked by some really saucy, you know, uncles at the family reunion that think they're being hilarious.
Right. Old Jim Duritz, his unemployed uncle.
Yeah, Uncle Jim. David Geffen asked him at the first interview, guaranteed. Now, Andrew, can you introduce this punch-up?
Well, I ended up working on this punch-up, and the main thing I thought about, you know, Pat really talked about, is this a beginning? I mean, today is December 1st, but is this really a beginning of December song? Is this really a December 31st rolling over into the New Year's song? Mm. I posited that really the energy of the song is more like end of February, beginning of March, when you're like, good God, when will this be over? And when will daylight savings time begin again?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that dark period between MLK Day and St. Patrick.
So I thought about taking it like darker, like what's a long February? But of course, long February, that doesn't make any sense. That's not sacrilegious because there's only 28 days
in
February.
The shortest month.
Sure.
So here's a copy of the lyrics for you, Pat. I decided to lean into the energy of December that I truly know and love. Evan?
Already great.
The tempo!
Just a couple clicks. Just a few clicks.
It's so fast.
A long December full of family and cheer. Somehow this year will be better than the last.
This is not a Duritz impression, but I love it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The holiday season's always such a blast. And it's one more night of Advent candles. And it's one more night of lighting up the tree. I heard you may not come home for Christmas. But remember how we sing fa la 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 fa la la la.
Oh, there's one syllable that works on Christmas.
Yeah. Van Morrison is the Nas, but I've got the fa-las.
I like how you passed out the lyrics, like just these incredibly dense, enigmatic things. Oh, kept the oysters, I like that.
Yeah. Gotta keep the oysters.
Yeah, but now they're in the Feast of the Seven Fish.
Smell of Christmas Eve, yeah.
And it's one more night of Nog and Carols. And watching Home Alone in Love Actually.
That's a good time.
I heard you may not come home for Christmas, but just remember how we'll sing. Fa-la-la-la-fa.
Andrew, you're killing it because it has the nostalgia feels.
It has the nostalgia and the happy. That's sad.
There we go.
You deleted the guitar and put in the glockenspiel.
Waited in my bed, was up way past 2 a.m. waiting for.
Oh, it's a kid's point of view.
Well, or a kid at heart, Pep.
But they don't land until you breathe a little slower. Dream of sugar plums, let your lids tickle and roll over. A long December full of family and cheer. Somehow this year will be better than the last.
Same line, different vibe. Different vibe.
Tree so tall, a star brushes the ceiling. The holiday season's always such a blast.
And it's the breakdown.
One more night waiting for Santa. And it's one more night snuggling with your family. I heard you may not come home for Christmas.
Christmas, but just remember how we'll sing. Fa la la la, fa la 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 la, fa la la la, yeah.
Oh yeah, is that a xylophone?
Fa la la la, fa la 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 la, fa la la la, yeah.
Oh, you're getting the spirit of Duritz on these yas.
I'm picturing for the music video Santa with dreadlocks. Yeah, we didn't discuss this. The original music video has Courtney Cox in it. This is just Santa. Oh, that's right. Yes, we didn't get into that. We talked about Courtney Cox, but yeah, she's in this video too.
Wow.
I will say it felt a little dirty. Adam Duritz is Jewish. It felt a little dirty to turn this into a full Christmas song.
You went full Christmas.
But then you know what I thought? I thought, who wrote White Christmas? Who wrote all of the great Christmas anthems of the 20th century?
Yeah.
There's a lot of New York Jewish songwriters who were writing those hits.
A litany of great Jewish songwriters.
I think Duritz would be happy to be in there right next to Irving Berlin writing
he wants to be the heir apparent to Van Morrison, but he could be the heir to Irving Berlin.
That's what Geffen thought. He thought he was the next
Andrew. This
legend
is amazing. It's exactly like you said. There's a couple of the lines are the same line, different vibe, but the vibe is fixed.
But the vibe is punched up. There's a little, like, I tried to keep a little sadness in there in the Of course, you don't know if they're going to come home for Christmas. Yeah, you want? Yeah. I think they will.
Yeah.
I hope you will. But there's that nostalgic vibe. It's still there.
Little, the poignancy.
While you're eating the Feast of the Seven Fish.
And there's something about the chord of it or something. There is like a melancholy to it that you can't escape, even with the, there's a whimsy to it. I don't know.
I couldn't have said it better than myself, the chord of it.
Yeah.
The chord of it has a melancholy.
Same chords, just sped up about 80%.
Yeah.
Same chords.
I was talking about kind of recently how long it's been since there's been like a canonical Christmas song. I think maybe the most recent one is All I Want for Christmas by Mariah Carey. Mm-hmm. And that's what, 20 years ago now? Probably more.
30.
Yeah. 30 years ago. So we're overdue. Apparently, someone should give you a record contract.
Wow.
Sight unseen for that Christmas song. Santa.
Evan, did you catch a special Easter egg that I put in the song for you?
For me?
Yeah.
That we got a tall tree? Our family used to always get we used to get the 9-10 footers.
It has to do with the Glockenspiel solo. If you go back and listen to the Glockenspiel solo.
Oh my God. Okay, I'm dialing back the punch up. Let me go back to the Glockenspiel solo.
A little Easter egg.
For
deep fans of the podcast and maybe Evan, but I think even though this is an Easter egg specifically for Evan, I think it might have blown right over his head.
It might be so deep, I don't even get it.
So deep, Evan
doesn't
get it.
Let me just play it. Playing the Glockenspiel solo.
This would be like if Evan played a quote from Point Break to me and I didn't get it.
Yeah, which could have. Yeah, I have done. I have played Busey for you. Okay, so we're running it back.
Back and to the left.
What?
I got it. Oh.
If you're only
just
listening
on the
to
last,
this, you're...
On the last note, I got it. Oh, wow. Only because you alerted me.
I was sure you weren't going to get it, and then I was going to offer to give you $5 for it if you got it, knowing you weren't going to get it, but now it's clear you're going to get
it.
It
hit me like the
great
realization.
I'm not going to queue up this segment. Yeah.
Okay, so what Andrew did is he put in the Glockenspiel solo the melody of the very first song I ever picked as host of this show last year as my first walk-in song, which was a Christmas episode when we started last December. And I picked a Herb Alpert song called The Bell That Couldn't Jingle.
A song so unknown that you played it for Weird Al Yankovic, and Weird Al was like, I've never heard that song before. Like, that's a man who's heard every song.
And he knows every song.
This is really good. I'm going to have to listen to this.
Oh, I like this.
And so I jammed in, instead of the guitar solo,
I didn't hear it first
the Glockenspiel solo to The Bell That Couldn't Jingle.
I did not hear it the first time you played it. Only going back and really focusing could I hear the melody. But yeah, it didn't quite fit with the category.
That is like the densest web of like reference, in-joke, obscure music. Yeah. Like,
I'm curious if any of the fans picked it up before you did, and I think the answer is probably no.
No. No. If anyone says they got that the first time.
That was the dinging was a Glockenspiel? That's a Glockenspiel?
Yeah, the little, the set of bells. that's like laid out like a piano keyboard.
Oh, wow.
That you play with mallets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I didn't know that's what a Glockenspiel was. Great name.
Yeah. The Germans, they knew how to name a baby. Glockenspiel, Schadenfreude, Autobahn, tons of great words.
I thought you were going to name instruments. I was like,
no, just German words.
But talking about your first ever walk-in song on the podcast, Evan, I think brings us to the final segment of the show. That's it. Walk-in music. What is your walk-in in music? Pat, every week, thanks so much for being here. Every week we close the podcast by talking about what song you would play to walk into an event, real or
why don't you
fictional.
Just give yours right off the bat? Give Pat an example so he knows how to do this.
Okay. My event is I haven't seen the ocean for a while.
Sure.
It's been a while since I've seen the ocean.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So I get in my car and go ahead and cue the song, Evan. And I get in my car and I drive down the Jersey Turnpike. There's some real kind of dissonance to hearing this on the Jersey Turnpike.
Yeah, this doesn't sound
some
Jersey to
sound.
Me.
Yeah. Of course, real fans of the band, like me, know that anytime you hear the mandolin being played, it's being played by Levon Helm. Generally, because it's a song that the band worked up while he was working on an oil rig after he quit the band, and Richard Manuel was playing the drums, and when he came back, he didn't start playing the drums. He played the mandolin. But this is from their run in the 90s when Robbie Robertson wasn't in the band, so fans of Team Levon can rest assured you're not going to have to hear Robbie Robertson guitar solo and grudgingly admit it's amazing.
Oh, brother.
So anyway, I arrive at Atlantic City and I walk into the ocean. This is my walk-in song for walking into the ocean in Atlantic City. It's the band's version of Atlantic City by Bruce Springsteen.
That's disgusting water to walk in, by the way. Just it's Jersey, like casinos dumping their
yeah. You're in a bad place. If you're I need to look at the ocean. You go there.
I love it.
Meet me at night. In Atlantic City.
I mean, it doesn't scream beach music to me, but...
But it's also got the soft accordion edges.
Oh!
Yeah, oh, wow.
Therefore, this song is alternative rock.
This song is a Zydeco song. The band just went full Zydeco on it. It sounds like Clifton Chenier.
Okay, my walk-in song is I'm going to a family get-together over the holidays, and they're all tired of me, a professional but not well-known musician perhaps, about me telling them about my new podcast or whatever I'm working on. And so I walk into this track because I need a new way to ask them this question. I need a new way.
Have you got my latest record project?
You got my Have you got my latest record?
What is this?
Project. This is a real release, very recent, from Rock and Roll Hall of Famer and all-time great and sadly declined Van Morrison.
No.
This is a real record put out by Van Morrison called Latest Record Project, in which he sings over and over, just publicly broadcasting his mental decline. Have you got my latest record project?
It made you get his latest record project. You got it.
You got.
You're listening to it.
I think he might even claim that I haven't. I streamed it. I've ripped it. Right. But did I buy it? Did I go down to the FYE, to the alternative rock section, and buy a hard copy, a printed album of his latest record project? I did not.
Is that an industry thing? Record project?
No. No one calls it a record project. Maybe in Ireland. It's a record, or it's a recording.
They're the Nas.
Look at this.
The Nas.
Oh, does he have Nas?
He's got the Nas.
Yeah.
Oh man,
the Nas are back.
Wow.
I went through I wouldn't say this phase is over, but there was a 2 or 3 year window where I bought a bunch of really expensive concert tickets to see some of my idols.
Mm-hmm.
I saw Paul McCartney live. Jaw on the floor. Amazing show.
Yeah.
Spent so much money for those tickets, and I walked away being like, should have paid more. Drove to Philadelphia, saw Stevie Wonder play my favorite Stevie Wonder album front to back. Amazing. One of the best shows of my life. Third show in that run, Van Morrison. I was kind of like, not doing so great.
Not so great, huh?
I shouldn't have.
Well, he didn't have this song out.
They were the cheapest tickets.
He didn't perform this song.
And it was the worst show.
But you got, but I did a similar thing. You check them off, though. You know, I did the same thing after Bowie and Prince died because I was like, oh, I'm never. I got a seat in the.
You went to see them dead.
You went to see them dead.
No. I when they passed away, I kind of I realized that I missed my opportunity to ever see them perform.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So I kind of made it a point to, like, I saw Paul McCartney after that myself. Yeah, it was incredible.
It was incredible.
And
yeah.
I saw, like. I even went and saw Ringo, who was not as incredible, but I was like, I got to see all the Living Beatles if I can.
The funniest thing about seeing Van Morrison live is for the first three songs, I swear to God, the man played the saxophone and did not sing a word.
He was his own opener.
I got out my ticket to see if there was fine print. Like, Van Morrison plays the saxophone.
Playing his own
original
sax.
This concert also, I was there as well. He said nobody there had to wear masks, but it was 2018, which is kind of weird. Like, he was already yelling about that. Dude, it's not even an issue yet. Like, what do you know that we don't? And it's weird.
It really did solve a mystery to me, though, which is why are there so many mediocre saxophone solos on Van Morrison records? I'd always kind of wondered that. Like, I guess he has a friend or something that's like kind of an okay saxophone player. No. It is Van Morrison.
It's actually him.
Playing all the mediocre saxophone solos.
Anyway, I really just wanted an excuse to play this utterly insane track called Latest Record Project by
that
Van
there
Morrison.
Were Nas,
same guy doing Brown Eyed Girl, you know, 50 years later. He's doing this, and I'm nuts that this song exists. It's just amazing that this could exist in the world. Anyway, I'm passing the conch to you. Pat, did you bring anything for your walk-in music today?
I did, yes. And I think, you know, I think it connects to the song we listened to in that there's some, apparently some love involved. I think we kind of decoded some romance and some will they, won't they.
We ruined the song for you.
Yeah.
You were like, finally, a song that's not about love.
I know. And now we pulled it out. It's in there. So this is, I'm going to get a little romantic, much like Adam Duritz, I guess, and his two beautiful girlfriends, Courtney Cox and Jennifer Aniston. I'm not married.
Okay.
But I have,
Wow, breaking some news here on this gossip podcast.
But I would love to have one of these very cool weddings, with all my friends there and all my family. And I, my favorite part of weddings is the, like, when the bride and groom do their first dance.
Mm-hmm.
But in this fantasy, we actually sing a duet together.
Hell yeah.
Wow.
Everyone's there. It's a very cool wedding.
Yeah.
I don't know where it is, but wherever your dream cool wedding is, it's there.
Hollywood Hills, quite frankly. Like, coolest weddings probably.
Hollywood Hills.
Right next to the D.
Hollywood Hills. Or up in the canyons.
Yeah.
Everyone's gathered around the rim of the canyon. We come out to the dance floor. And this song... don't even dance. You can play it. We break into this duet.
Ooh. Yes.
This, is Islands in the Stream.
By Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers.
It's a really, really... I just think it's a really sweet duet. I've done this at karaoke with a coworker before. Hall of Fame karaoke song. It's good because it's a duet, but it's a very simple duet to do.
Yeah. Very singable.
I mean, if you were at a wedding and the bride and groom did this, I mean,
and
game
sang
over.
It to each other,
you'd lose your mind.
Oh, I'd lose my mind. I would leap out of my seat in order to gin the other wedding guests up into a frenzy to do an improv game where we are all the stream going past the two islands of the bride and groom. We would invent a new wedding dance in the moment.
You know what's nice about it too? It's a love song. I know I've railed against love songs, but what I like about this one, though, it is like not. It's a love song where both people are just like, we're together and we like each other and we're equals. Whereas I think most love songs, there's like, you know, I love you, but you don't love me.
Hmm.
I love you, but we broke up. Sure. I miss you. Right. You love her, whatever. This is just a nice, happy.
Yeah, even just a normal love song. You can ask yourself, like, does the other person really like that this song is being sung? This song is very clear.
There's no... this song shouldn't work dramatically because there's no conflict in it. It's like this and Walking on Sunshine are just like the two least conflict songs ever. But it's just, you know, Kenny... I love both of these artists. She just played at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She was just inducted, actually.
Yeah. She should be inducted into every Hall of Fame.
There was a weird... I don't know if you track this. She was accepted into the Hall of Fame earlier this year. And then she said, just kind of for some reason, she was like, you know what? Like, I don't really... I feel like other people deserve it more than me. Kind of weird opinion, but, you know, I guess kind of humble. Good for her.
Yeah, I don't know if you get to opt out, really.
She was just like, I'm not a rocker.
You don't. They said, we're going to put you in anyway.
Wow.
It's weird.
Oh, wow.
But then she eventually just said, fine, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this song is sampled by the Fugees, or one of the Fugees, Proz or something.
Really?
You know, by...
Oh, I never put that
That's
together.
That's an Islands in the Stream hook.
Now, you know, Ghetto Superstar.
Ghetto Superstar.
Yes.
So she could
from the movie Bullworth.
From Bullworth. Great flick. So Dolly Parton could also go in the Hip Hop Hall of Fame. Is all I'm saying.
Are you familiar with who wrote Islands in the Stream, Pat? Maybe you are, but maybe you're not.
It is not Kenny Rogers or Dolly. I assumed it was Kenny Rogers.
Irving Berlin.
I found this fact out probably 5 years ago, and it totally made me reimagine this group and made me a fan of this group when I dove into them. A group that was like widely hated in my youth, and now I'm a huge fan, and I'm like, I could have spent my whole
who
life
wrote
enjoying this group.
Yes. Islands in the Stream.
This song is by the fucking Bee Gees.
Wow.
The Bee Gees wrote Islands in
Amazing.
The Stream.
Amazing.
Yes. Mm. And like once you hear it, you're like, of course that's a Bee Gees song. It sounds like a Bee Gees song.
Yep,
but when
yep.
I went, I don't know, like they were kind of a punchline in the 80s and 90s. And it made me go back and listen to a lot of their music. There's also a really great documentary. I've talked about this.
I've seen it. That was my version of that, and totally made me rethink them. And yeah
now one of my
favorite
songs of all time is their song "To Love Somebody." It's just they have so many great.
Yeah, I'd like to see one of those like open-ended interview shows like they do on Netflix. That's just Adam Duritz talking with Barry Gibb about what it's like to break open a whole new generation of voices, just to be the signature voice of a generation. Just Adam Duritz saying, "So Barry, what was it like to sing real high for the first time? And nobody had ever heard that before."
"I don't know, Adam. What was it like for you to whine in that California surfer boy style? It must have been so hard. No one would give you a chance."
What's the newest...
This is
voice.
Very undercooked bit. I just thought of this, but I would like to see that interview.
No, I think,
what's the new voice of today?
No, I'm not. I wasn't even disrespecting the bit. I think I actually genuinely think a voice-based inquiry. Yeah, what's the new, what's like, okay. So if Barry Gibb was the voice of the 70s, let's just say, you know, broadly
sure.
speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
What's his face? Adam Duritz was the voice of, I guess,
of
the
alternative,
early
90s. Right. Yeah, he cracked open a new code. Oh, like
it's like, we haven't had a new, like, since the Macarena. What's the last dance? I guess flossing is a dance, but, like, we're overdue for
the Cupid Shuffle. You're overlooking the Cupid Shuffle, my friend.
Is that new?
Oh, yeah.
The Cupid Shuffle?
Well, the Cupid Shuffle is at least a post-Macarena dance, I think.
Okay, I'm not familiar with it.
Guys, we got to get out of this gosh darn episode, and I don't know how to do it because there's too much good stuff to talk about.
I know. I'm sorry. I want to stand a rabbit hole. I'm just saying, maybe in the comments or something, like, I'm hijacking it. I'm sorry. I want to know the new voice.
We're going to have to pitch it to the audience. Get up in our DMs. Get it, not even in the DMs. Get in the public mentions.
And we don't mean voice in the sort of broad, like, point of view.
Who's the 2022 Duritz?
What are we asking them to put in the comments? I can't even tell what you guys are talking about.
What singer, girl or boy, has the brand new sound? Like, at that time in the early 90s when Duritz drops, no one had heard it before.
Literal, like, tone and timbre,
the tone,
and
the
style of voice, not like style.
I'm just gonna say Billie Eilish. That's what I'm gonna say.
Maybe maybe you're right. That's a candidate.
Close. Yeah, close. She's definitely
my answer.
Got a new something.
I like that.
Yeah, Pat. It's been the ultimate treat to have you here.
Thank you.
And chat about this absolutely crucial song. I think we can confidently say that it's very punched up. And I demand that you all go download this song and get it on your holiday playlist. Sneak it in to the family playlist that goes, you know, you get to the end of the playlist so many times when you're spinning this thing up and you're home for the holidays, right? Get some new songs on there and make sure this song is on it by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/Gregory Brothers, the only place you can get these punch ups.
You could not play the original Long December for your family while you're around the fire. This one you can.
It's
fast enough. There are jingle bells. Yeah. We didn't talk about that, but there's jingle bells through the whole song. There's twice as many jingle bells on the chorus, like on a real Christmas song, because this is a real Christmas song. Put it on around the fire. Pat, what is the best place for people to follow you online?
At Pat Castles on Instagram, and then patcastles.com. I post new stuff.
Oh, I love it. I love a good comedian website.
Yeah, a lot of topical bits. I'm really baking the boundaries. Just Linktree, man.
Yeah, contact form, a Linktree. Hell yeah.
Contact form I never use.
Well, I'm going to your website immediately.
Thank you.
And everyone else, fan of the pod, you guys are in for a long December.
Get the party going. Punch up the jam. Punch it up. Punch it.
You've been listening to Punch Up the Jam.
That was a HeadGum original.